Welcome to the Butts in the Seats podcast, episode number 146.
And it's not a normal episode.
It's an extreme episode.
Extreme!
I think you're incapable of saying extreme without doing that hand motion.
It's true. I do the cross-arm X. Because, you know, this is an audio podcast. We talk about visual things all the time.
I'm Nick alongside Emily.
Extreme!
Or maybe I'm not, dude. You don't know.
You never know. We could be in separate worlds.
Emily's actually an AI-generated woman.
Can you imagine if that was like the crazy lore drop at the end of this whole podcast run? Surprise, Nick has just been having, you know, a psycho break this whole time, and I'm not real.
How much podcast is required to actually, like, create a fake episode?
I think we're there. I think we have enough.
I don't know how any of that works, because I don't look into this.
I don't want to. I am so vehemently anti-ChatGPT. No one has actually given me a good reason to use it. And every time someone's like, oh, well, you can just write a paper. Use your brain. Consider that. I have actually considered using ChatGPT to do my WrestleMania write-ups, like summarize this match. But then I think about it. I'm like, that is such a cop-out. That's so lazy.
Yeah.
I will not do that.
Because then why would you watch the
match? Why would I watch the show?
Yeah.
That's so lazy.
I think I used it as a test. And I was like, when's David Flair's last appearance?
And it was wrong.
Yeah. Yeah, but you were saying a lore drop. I think more realistically, it'd be like, all right, Emily and I broke up around episode 120, and I had to keep her going.
You've just been regenerating my voice.
I have joked that I just want to get a small little library of just your, yeah, okay, sick.
That is so much data to comb through.
I'm saying I'll have you record it. I'm not saying pull it from somewhere.
Oh, I thought you were saying go through all of our episodes and pull every time I said that.
No, I'm saying if I got to re-record a line, I just need you to say something the way it's a more natural transition.
Anyway, no more of this AI conversation. Yeah. Let's talk about the land of extreme, brother.
The anti-AI.
The anti-AI.
Yeah, we are doing...
this is some woke shit.
The second-to-last original run ECW pay-per-view, Massacre on 34th Street.
This was a fun show. I'm not going to lie. I liked it.
I'm cooling on it as I'm going to sit with it, because I had to watch this twice because I did not take good notes the first time.
So. Because you were sitting and enjoying the show, and I feel like that has something to be said.
I was also very sleepy.
Well...
But Massacre on 34th Street, very similar to the movie Miracle on 34th Street in that it's a lot closer to Thanksgiving than it is Christmas because the show took place on December 3rd, 2000, but it'll be coming out on Thanksgiving Day for us.
Ooh!
Santa has officially crossed Macy's.
So it is officially Christmas season. And I was ready to shit on this show because it's called Massacre on 34th Street. I'm like, this isn't on 34th Street. It actually is. This takes place in the Hammerstein Ballroom, which is on 34th Street in New York City.
Well, originally you were like, Madison Square Garden's not on 34th Street. I'm like, no, this is Hammerstein Ballroom.
Yeah, because I couldn't remember where this was originally. But, like, this is a very famous ballroom. This is something that, like, the WWF has utilized for their shows. There are concerts there. Like, we can go see a concert. Apparently, Cat's Eye is going to be there. Hayley Williams will be there.
I had to look and see, like, is Madison Square Garden touching 34th Street? It's touching 33rd.
Oh, so close.
I think it's this arena is apparently a bitch to get rings in and out of. I might be thinking of a different...
I believe it.
But Hammerstein Ballroom, this is a basically sold out show. It's like 2,600 in attendance. I like double checked. I'm like, what is it now? It's like, oh, about that. So,
yeah.
And allegedly, this did 55,000 buys, which is the same as like the current WCW shows. So,
oh. But this feels so different. This feels full and excited and happy.
We've talked before about... Is WCW technically in third place, so like business-wise? It's all relative, but...
It is all relative. WCW is definitely in third place when it comes to audience participation and passion.
Yeah.
Because, like, yes, 2,600's not huge. We've done the TNA shows that arena seats 2,000.
Something like that.
It feels so different when it is 2,600 people that are so freaking excited to be there, so happy to be there, so into what's going on, versus 2,000 people where 90% of them got in for free.
Yeah.
They're just trying to kill time from the heat.
And hey, there's one match that you can kind of experience the difference for that.
In this show? Yeah. Yeah, that's true. But as a whole, this show has more excitement and passion than any of the WCW shows that we're watching. And WCW is still trying to fill way bigger arenas and try to lie to themselves. Like, oh no, we're sold out. Like, no, you're not. You're not.
I do have a couple backstage notes for this show. Apparently, recently in ECW, everyone got paid, so they're only 5 weeks behind now.
Okay.
That's still not good.
Progress is progress, brother.
That is basically the length of the recent government shutdown.
So relatable.
Yeah. Technically, the shutdown was a little longer.
Jesus Christ.
There's going to be 3 ECW shows in January, and that's it.
Ugh.
And they're like in the middle of nowhere. Like, they are not in like marquee locations.
Does the talent know?
We'll talk about that more on the next ECW episode, because they don't really know until Paul Heyman shows up on Raw.
Right, I know that, yeah. But like, can they kind of feel it? Like, what are the conversations backstage sounding
yeah,
like?
You know? I mean, they know there's no shows scheduled, because there's like talks of like, hey, there's going to be a pay-per-view in March, and it's like, okay. There's not, yeah.
Okay.
And additionally, The Sandman, Steve Corino, Mikey Whipwreck, and Tajiri are all pissed at Paul Heyman because he canceled shows in December that were in Texas. And like, oh, hey, we booked other like events around our shows there.
Like signings and meet and greets.
I mean,
kind of
they probably have a little bit of like, they probably have more leniency to go work small indie shows around that too. And they're like, oh, I thought like we were going to be there and now we're not. And you kind of fucked me on that.
And now I have to pay my own way probably.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then speaking of getting screwed on contracts and all that, apparently Rob Van Dam and Jerry Lynn are the only two who have actually like asked out of their contracts.
Okay.
Both of them will be on the next show, though.
Rob Van Dam, too?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's like he just shows up like that one last time.
Okay.
The guys who kind of ask, like, they can kind of sense the writing on the wall. Or like, I'm going to come back for one more.
Exactly. Like, that's kind of what I'm wondering. Like, the upper guys, like Rob Van Dam, I feel like they can kind of feel it more. The lower down guys, are they still like, oh, this is still my chance. Like, this is my break. I don't know.
I know a couple of these guys are actually going to show up in WCW.
Good. At least I'm saying good because it gives them a little bit more exposure so that maybe they can go further. I know they don't all, but, like, exposure is good.
I'm saying it might be better to sign with WWE at this time.
Might not have been an offer.
Like, for some reason, I think I know Johnny Swinger shows up in WCW before the end. But that's it for the backstage notes. I don't have a weather report or anything. I didn't really bother watching the TV leading into this, honestly.
I don't blame you.
Because there also isn't much TV to go on.
Right.
It's just the local channels.
Right.
So let's get into our main show. We open with Steve Corino and Jack Victory cutting a promo about how lame wrestling in New York City used to be with Bruno Sammartino. Ugh.
Yeah, how lame. You know, these crazy shows in Madison Square Garden. Ugh.
And how crazy Bob Backlund is. But, oh, you know, we both voted for him.
Voted for him to do what?
I think, like, he kind of ran for president. I don't know how much paperwork was actually filed.
Interesting. Yeah, I couldn't get a read on these two's relationship. It was hard to tell, like, throughout the whole show, too. They keep cutting back to these two, and they're, like, very buddy-buddy, but Steve Corino is kind of coming off, like, not confident in their friendship.
Yeah, it's like, hey, do you want the title? It's like, no, it looks better on you. So
you're my friend, right? Like,
yeah.
You're not going to leave me, right?
Not a lot of focus here. We do hear Joey Styles and Joel Gartner being introduced underneath this.
Oh my God, yeah.
Corino tells Jerry Lynn and Just Incredible that he's willing to do anything to walk out champion. And Corino and Victory are just fucking around in this promo. Like this is a bad promo.
It is. And I wouldn't even classify it as fucking around. It's confusing. It's disjointed.
They're like, do the high spot thing. It's like, oh, I'm going to steal the promo. And he just does high spot and like puts his fingers in a V. I'm like, what?
I don't know.
This feels like this should have been on like the pre-show because the version I found actually had a little bit of like the, hey, buy this pay-per-view.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, this is just a strange way to open the show because it did not get me hype or anything.
No, it was kind of cold. Like I said, disjointed is the best word I have. It's like both of them had a plan for how they wanted the promo to go and they kind of had to compromise on what actually happened.
But then we go to Joey Styles and Joel Gartner in the arena, in the ring. And I did write down Joel Gartner's intro here.
I will say I love his feather boa neck brace.
Yes.
That's fun. That's fun and different.
Well, Emily, why don't you regale us with this limerick?
Well, well, well. I always win the bedroom battle. I kick it like a cowboy. I slaughter them like cattle. And a stud muffin never kisses and tells, so I would never tattle. But your mom does some pretty outrageous things with a pacifier and a rattle. Jesus. Because I'm not just her babysitter, I'm her power hitter, the quintessential stud muffin, the lyrical miracle, and the sexual intellectual, Joel Every woman's in fashion fatuation across the whole entire nation. They like the pulsation, but they love the penetration. And I can sense your frustration because all you get is masturbation. You can use your imagination or I could give you a demonstration. Gertner.
Your pacing on that read like the fucking tunnel scene in Willy Wonka.
Trying to get through it.
And there's certainly no signs that we are slowing. God.
It's incoherent.
But then Joey Styles does a title drop, and we go into the usual ECW opening package. I'm like, a lot of Rob Van Dam. He's barely working here.
Yeah, a lot of Rob Van Dam.
And from there, we go right into the Bad Street Boys of Christian York and Joey Matthews versus Simon and Swinger. And I'm like, oh yeah, we got this match last time.
Did we?
Yep.
Oh, okay, I mean, I'm not mad about it.
Simon and Swinger have a problem. That's pretty much it. There was nothing else in that promo.
Yeah. The promos for me, like, it's important to set up the story, whatever, but it's really just a means to an end. I just want to watch the matches. In WCW, I need the promos. In WWE, even, but, like, in ECW, I'm just here for Slugfest. I just want to watch wrestling.
Well, Dawn Marie then comes out, and she's like, I need a man. Actually, I need two men. And
ooh.
Joel Gardner commentary's like, Joey, come on, tag with me, buddy. We know each other.
Ew.
She has a managerial contract, and basically, I'll fuck the winner. Like,
yeah, that's the under.
I am amazed, and maybe this is just because in my brain they did this constantly with the Terry Invitational Tournament in WWF. They didn't make a services joke once. I was ready for, like, I will, like, service you guys.
That's true.
I was
the restraint.
I don't know if it's restraint. I think it just didn't cross their minds.
Oh, maybe. I don't know. That seems like such a clear choice, you know?
Oh, it didn't come up in these entrances, but notably, we are watching one of the like original versions with all the original music. The Bad Street Boys are hit from behind, and Simon and Swinger hit a double press slam. The boys hit a hip toss powerbomb and then a double suplex. Christian York is kicked to the floor and then thrown around ringside. Simon and Swinger double team York in the corner and then hit a double back heel trip. Swinger hits triple suplexes, aka a Simon series.
Ooh.
Dawn Marie then takes a chair away from Johnny Swinger so casually that no one reacts or notices. I'm like, was that meant to be a spot? Like,
hard to say. Yeah, it was so nothing. It was weird.
It's the one thing they didn't want to happen as Swinger holds up York for a diving clothesline and Simon accidentally hits Swinger. Matthews gets the tag and hits a pop-up low blow and then a neck breaker. I'm like, why did you have to do the pop-up there? Matthews hits a suicide dive to Swinger, and then York hits a springboard plancha to Simon and Swinger. Back in the ring, Swinger crotches York, and Simon Diamond hits a Simonizer on Matthews.
Is that actually what it's called, or are you just making that up?
No, I was quoting Joey Styles. Oh, he's okay. Very good to note the actual moves.
Good.
Even though later on in the show, he calls something a vertebraker, and I'm like, that's not, because I didn't know what to call a move, but I called it an inverted vertebraker.
That's a tongue twister. An inverted vertebraker.
An invertebraker.
There you go.
Joey Matthews stops a double superplex and York hits a sunset flip powerbomb. Matthews hits a top rope Frankensteiner, setting York up for a rebel yell, which is a diving double knee drop, for the win. Like, oh, it was a very quick match.
It was a very quick little match, but it was fun. I mean, I'm not mad about it.
Post-match, Dawn Marie hugs Christian York as Joey Matthews is just down. And Joel Gardner's like, I have to go check on him.
Yeah, like, was he actually fucked up? Did you ever figure it out?
So, they've been associated on TV. I think this is just a way to get Joel off commentary.
Okay.
Because...
Does he go back? I lost track of that.
No.
Okay, because I know someone else joins, but couldn't remember if it became a three-man bench.
We hear his voice in a pre-recorded ad.
Gotcha.
Yeah, so they've been associated, so I think this was just meant to be a thing there. That said, Joey Matthews is selling this well, because I'm like, he is. Shit. But Dawn Marie rakes Christian York's eyes, and Simon and Swinger hit a problem solver on Christian York.
Oh, swerve, bro.
And Dawn Marie and Simon Diamond kiss. They are shoot together at this time.
Yeah, I believe that.
It was like, well, you're not doing anything. Pair up with them.
Dawn was here the whole time.
And people come down to like look over Matthews, and it's like, he seems banged up, but I don't know what. This match was short, but fun.
It really was. It was a fun opening match. Like, it was exactly what I wanted it to be. It was a good time. It doesn't need to be that deep.
Yeah, I'm trying to think, like, what else would have been a good opener for this show? And I'm like, I think this probably was among the better choices.
Yeah, probably.
I said, Dawn Marie has definitely downgraded from world champion Steve Corino to Simon and Swinger.
Like, from people that she's with?
Because, yeah, she turned on Steve Corino during the last pay-per-view.
Oh, I thought you meant, like, dating. Sorry.
No, managerial.
Okay. That's fair.
Let's go backstage. We get Danny Doring and Roadkill. They said they didn't go to the House of Hardcore to get Doring's haircut and Roadkill's beard shaved.
Yeah, he has a much shorter beard.
Yeah, so they went there to like train and like kind of get back to the roots, and they got attacked and haircut. Danny Doring with the short hair just looks like backstage agent Billy Kidman.
Ooh, okay. Yeah, we've talked about this. I have a really hard time placing Billy Kidman as like an adult backstage producer person. As an adult, I don't know, the grown-up version of Billy. Whenever he's in like documentaries or something for WWE or as like a talking head, the nameplate says Billy Kidman, but I'm like, that's not him. I can't place it mentally. That's not Billy to me.
Back to the promo. Danny Doring says they paid their dues to take the FBI's belt, and if they lose, they will apparently split up as a team.
Dun, dun, dun.
That's a realistic stipulation.
That is a realistic stipulation. It's not like, if I lose, I leave wrestling forever.
Yeah.
Like, this actually could happen.
We had one of those last show.
Yeah, no. I'm still mad about the hang up your boots match. I still think about that.
But that is so left my brain.
Oh, it is in the forefront of mine all the time.
Doring also references vague rumors and like, they're not true. I'm like, okay. I'm guessing it was something about them leaving to go to a different company or something.
Maybe. Something in like internet forums or whatever is happening in 2000.
Doring then fires up and leaves last word to Roadkill, who doesn't quite match the energy.
No. You love Roadkill.
I love him, but I'm like, okay, but not your best work there. That match is not next, and I never get that. Like, hey, here's a hot promo. We're going to go to a totally different match.
True.
Especially on pay-per-views where it's like, I'm not going to change the channel.
Yeah, I bought it.
Our next match is Easy Money with Hot Commodity versus Balls Mahoney.
Oh, big balls. And who joins commentary, Nick?
Cyrus joins because Joel left. Like, oh, hey, it's sold out. That's the only seat.
That's a great reason for Cyrus to join commentary.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like Joey wants him there, but Cyrus is like, well, it's the only seat in the house.
Easy Money is the love child of Buff Bagwell and Jeff Jarrett here with his outfit.
Oh, with the outfit? Yeah.
Yeah. He also is rocking the G-string under his stirrup trunks. I'm like, what the fuck is this look?
It's definitely something, but Balls Mahoney really just steals the show for me. I love this man. I love his vibe.
I've seen Balls Mahoney described as extreme Jim Duggan, and I see it.
I like that.
He is also one of the reasons why we find the original audio versions.
Yes.
Because
his song is something else.
I've got big balls slaps.
You're saying your balls slaps?
And you know who agrees? There is one lady on the hard cam who is rocking the fuck out. I'm like, that's you with a time machine.
Yes, it is. We talk about if I had a time machine, I would go and sit front row at an ECW show during their heyday. This is me. This is me fulfilling that dream.
Yeah.
I found myself. She is going so hard to balls up them all.
She's the only one standing. Like,
yeah, she's so jazzed. It's so me. I love it so much.
Easy Money refused to start the match with Balls holding his chair. They start with a lot of back and forth and some chain wrestling until some Balls punches, but Balls is closed onto the floor and then dived on. Balls hits a back suplex and then sends Money to the floor and dives onto all the men of Hot Commodity. Elektra did not get in there, but Joey notes that Elektra is defying gravity tonight, but not like that considering it's 2000, so the musical's not out.
Nope, that doesn't come out until 2004.
Side note, we just saw part two.
Yeah, it was fine. Great review on the Butts in the Seats podcast.
We're not doing a Butts in the Cinema on Wicked 2.
No. Wicked 1 was way better.
Balls goes up to the top rope, but Easy Money dodges a New Jersey jam and then hits a money clip, which is a buckshot lariat now.
Oh.
Money hits a jawbreaker and goes up to the top rope, but is crotched for a superplex. We get more Balls punches and sends Money into the corner, but Money blocks a sunset flip with a reverse vertebraker.
Ooh. There it is, the revertebreaker.
I think I said...
Sorry, the invertebreaker.
Yeah, I think I said inverted earlier. I wrote reverse here.
Revertebreaker also works.
Balls dodges a swanton bomb and hits a super kick. Mahoney grabs his chair, but Chris Hamrick of Hot Commodity, which something about that just sounds like a fucking mid-2000s show on E.
It does. It sounds
Chris
like...
Chris Hamrick on Hot Commodity.
Yeah, it sounds like a, like the soup, you know? Yeah.
But Hamrick steals the chair and Hot Commodity stop another superplex while Elektra distracts the ref and Commodity hit a leaping neck breaker, a dive over leg drop, and then a diving moonsault for the win.
Can't believe you let Balls lose.
This match wasn't bad. I did laugh at the interference finish. It's just, we know that we're watching it. It's like, do you have to do that? What's going to happen if the ref sees?
It's just for the storytelling. It's just for the flow.
It's the inverse DQ. It's like, why?
Why? What's the point? Everything is no DQ.
But yeah, this match was nothing crazy.
It wasn't, but it was still fun. The vibes were right. Like, the crowd being so into it, like, I'm going to keep harping on it. The crowd's energy translates to what's happening in the ring. It doesn't matter if what's happening in the ring is not all that great. The crowd is jazzed. And, like, that makes me feel excited.
I'm trying to think of all the ECW shows we've done. Like, how many have been, I guess, here or in the ECW arena? Like, it hasn't been many.
Like, yeah, that's true. Like, we haven't... This is the first one that we're seeing in the Hammerstein Ballroom, I think. And we haven't seen very many in the ECW arena. So, yeah, you're probably right.
Maybe Barely Legal. The first one they did was probably in one of their spots.
Maybe. I'll have to go, like, deep dive back into it. But, yeah, we really haven't seen much from the ECW arena.
Yeah, they've been traveling and doing that thing, so...
Did we go see a show in the ECW arena?
I don't think we've seen a show there. I have worked a show there.
Yeah, maybe that's what I'm thinking of.
I sent you a photo of the bathroom, which has like a nice little ECW mural in there.
So cool.
Post-match, Hot Commodity attack balls Mahoney. Nova comes in to make the save, and he sends all three men to the floor, dives from the corner onto them, and him and Julio De Niro get in the ring and the bell rings. I'm like, was this a scheduled match?
It happened so quickly. Like, it felt organic. So, like, I don't know. I mean, yes, but, like, in kayfabe, I don't know.
Match properly starts. Nova hits double knees in the corner and then a modified powerbomb elbow drop. Commentary talks about how, like, oh, this is a different Nova after, like, last pay-per-view. So, I'm like, more ruthless.
Sure. You know how Nova, the comic book character, is ruthless.
Balls Mahoney is still at ringside, which distracts the ref for a springboard dropkick from Hamrick. De Niro hits a torture rack neck breaker and then a diving moonsault press. De Niro hits some grounded offense, then taunts the crowd and hits an STO. The two trade punches until Nova gets him in the corner and stomps him. Nova then hits a step-up enziguri, like, to the spine. He does not get up to the head. I don't know what happened there. Nova then runs into a thrown chair from ringside. Nova hits a spin doctor, which is a crossroads on Julio De Niro. Ah. So Elektra comes in to slap him. Nova just hits a kryptonite crunch on her. I'm like, Jesus.
A kryptonite crunch. What a name.
The ref checks on her as Nova hits a weird side-kicking leg drop. Like, he goes up to the top rope and just does a weird, like, mid-air kick for a leg drop. Like, what were you going for there, man? You landed like a normal leg drop. You didn't do anything different with that. You just put a little flourish on it. Hot Commodity break up the pin and hit a flip-over slam to Nova. Balls Mahoney then comes in and just kills Hot Commodity with chair shots, setting De Niro up for a swanton bomb for the win.
This match and the match before it really kind of melded into one match in my brain. I couldn't really decipher who was in what.
Well, it doesn't help that Balls Mahoney's music hits at the end of this.
Exactly. That's why it all just kind of melded into one stupid crazy match.
And Nova has good music because when he ran out, he comes out to Intergalactic.
Oh, does he?
Yeah, by the Beastie Boys.
I missed that.
It was so brief.
Okay, yeah.
I just note the copyrighted music when it hits.
Sure, no, yeah. I expected it to be nerdier for Nova. I expected him to have nerdier music, like the fucking Superman theme or something.
I noted the, like, why the distraction finish before? And same with this match. I'm like, it was more turnabout as fair play, but it's like, you did do a distraction finish two matches in a row. I guess it is telling a story, but I'm like, again, you guys, we don't need to. Just balls can come in. It's fine.
The balls can come. I will say, because I don't want this to be in the edit and get people mad at me, he would have had to come out to the Superman or the Batman theme because there wasn't a set Marvel superhero theme yet because it's in the year 2000 and the Marvel Cinematic Universe had not been created yet. So.
Okay. Any final thoughts on this match?
No. It was fun. I love Balls Mahoney. That's all. Like, I'm just so happy to be watching ECW. I have so much fun watching these shows. I don't have anything analytical to say. I'm just like, that was really great. That was so fun. That was a great vibe. Like, I'm just happy to be here, brother.
Yeah, this is another, like, decent, but, like, unspectacular match. Just like,
not spectacular. But, again, if I was in the audience for the show, I'd be having the night of my fucking life.
Hot Commodity, don't do anything for me.
No, I don't care enough.
We have racist three count at home.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, because Chris Hamrick does have a big old Confederate flag on the back of his shirt.
He does. We don't need to mention it. We don't need to go into it. It's not great, Bob.
So before we go backstage, for some reason, Balls' music just completely cuts out for all the replays.
Which is such a shame. Yeah. Like, play that song as much as you can.
But we go backstage, I think, to Rhino, because he just appears to be, like, in an apartment building hallway.
Yeah.
It's just, like, I don't know where you are.
I'm assuming it's still in this building. Like, it's probably, like, in the basement somewhere?
I don't know, but he just keeps punching the door next to him while intensely talking about whether or not he's going to, like, let Spike live tonight.
And he calls Spike, straight up calls him a pussy. Like, yeah. Says the word pussy, and I'm like, oh, we're just saying pussy now, huh?
we have a much more clear cut use of bad words later. God,
we're talking a lot about balls and pussy. Like, I know my mom doesn't listen to this show, but Mom, don't listen to this episode.
Oh, I've noted this before, but way back when we were doing the Randy Savage Kevin Nash storyline, and there was like the sewage in the limo, and somehow we had ads accidentally inserted.
Oh my God,
and it was for sewage companies. I worry what the fuck ad would get placed into this show.
Oh, it'd be for those AI sex chatbots.
Yeah, or fucking Blue Chew. Well, speaking of the algorithm not helping us, this next ad. Hey, do you want to jerk off to Dawn Marie and Jasmine St. Clair?
Yeah, Mom, turn off the podcast. It is just... Okay, so this website makes no sense. This is an ad for the ECW website.
Yeah.
You can log on to this website and you can get news about matches, fucking porn, and... Oh, read about what the Dudleys are doing backstage. Like,
yeah, so the Dudleys are going to be showing up at an upcoming show. I'm like, okay, I guess WWE is like, that's fine.
But that's all in the same sentence as, look at these sexy photos one of our women took in the window. Ooh, she's naked. Like, and also, the Dudleys are doing this event. Like, this doesn't make any sense.
And we have a pay-per-view coming up.
What?
Hey, in your post-nut clarity, maybe buy some tickets.
Post not like guilt, like, oh shit, I shouldn't have done that. Give him some money.
Now, I thought you were going to say this doesn't make any sense for a different reason. Because you gave shit, I think it was on the Patreon, for WCW's website. Because what was it?
WCWWrestling.com. I was so confused by everything else that was going on the ECW website. I didn't pay attention to
it. It is ECWWrestling.com.
Yeah, Extreme Championship Wrestling, Wrestling.com. It's still dumb.
You doubled up on the wrestling and did not focus on that in this ad.
Not at all. It should have been ecwboobs.com.
Well, speaking of ECW wrestling, wrestling.com, let's go to some wrestling.
Great.
It's Danny Doring in Roadkill versus the FBI.
Hell yeah.
Little Guido, hell Tony yeah. Mameluke with Big Sal for the Sal. ECW tag team titles.
Hey, yo.
Big Sal recently pinned Scott Hall on a house show.
Good.
That just had like a fucking Mad Lib sentence.
It does, actually.
Big Sal pinned Scott Hall in an ECW house show.
Yeah, that is a Mad Lib sentence.
As much as I love the gimmick of Tony Mameluke being measured in liquid ounces, it doesn't make sense.
He needs to be Tony Marinara.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Him being Tony Mameluke does not make sense for him to be liquid ounces.
I still love that he is measured in liquid ounces because I think that's hilarious. But yes, I agree. It should be Marinara.
Guido slaps Doring and then tries a quick armbar, but Doring slips out. Guido keeps trying to ground Doring, but the two try a dropkick at the same time and stand off. They trade hard chops, then Mameluke comes in to get chopped and counters a wheelbarrow suplex with a bulldog and then hits an arm drag. Roadkill comes in, hits a press slam and a Vader bomb elbow. Doring tags in and Roadkill hits a dirt road slam on Mameluke. And then Doring and Roadkill hit a heart attack, but they call it a Lancaster Lariat of Lust.
Oh. Okay, I like it.
Sal and Roadkill brawl on the outside, so Tony hits a diving tornado DDT to the floor. Doring wants to dive, but is hit with a chair and is double powerbombed from the corner onto the chair. Like, ow. Mameluke hits a dragon screw and then a dropkick, leading to a diving dropkick from Guido. Guido hits an Italian leg sweep and the FBI work over Doring. Guido hits a Sicilian slice, but only gets a two. So Doring hits a G-spot sweep and makes the hot tag to Roadkill. Roadkill hits a TKO stunner, apparently called the barn burner.
Yeah.
And an Amish bomb. Then baseball slides Sal and then does his rope step dive onto him on the outside.
Which just looks so crazy. It's just like, it's a rope step fall. It's not a dive.
Yeah.
He just kind of like tips over.
I find it interesting that like, I don't see more people do that. Everyone right? like is like quickly get out of the ropes. No one does like the, I'm going to balance and then jump.
Yeah. I think it'd be cool if we brought that back. But like what character would do that right now?
You know, I could see Bronson Reed doing something like that.
Ooh, okay.
Doring comes in and gets crotched again. Doring low blows Mameluke, then hits a sloppy something from the top rope, which is not the actual name of the move. I know he has a...
Does he have a sloppy named move?
No, but just... Oh, okay. I'm like, I don't know what that was.
A sloppy something. No, it just looked bad. Whatever it was.
Guido grabs a title belt as Joey Styles notes, we actually live up to our stipulations.
Yeah, who was that a dig on?
I don't know, but apparently not a dig on the first match where they didn't go through the stipulation of Dawn Marie gets the winner.
Well...
Guido hits a belt shot, but Doring kicks out. The FBI dodge a springboard clothesline from Roadkill and then try a double armbar. Doring comes in and sends Mameluke to the apron, then super kicks Tony Mameluke, who goes from the apron into the front row in one of the roughest looking bumps I've seen in a while.
Yeah, I said he was kicked into oblivion. He just kind of crumbled and vanished once he got to the audience, just like... Yeah. Don't touch me for a minute. I gotta recoup.
Like, he went over the barricade and then just went into the void.
Yeah. Yeah. Oblivion.
Guido wants an unprettier, but Road killed Connors, and he and Doring hit a wheelbarrow diving leg drop combo, apparently called the Buggy Bang, for the win and the titles.
Woo! Buggy Bang!
The crowd and I love us some Roadkill.
Yeah. I'm having a great time. This is a fun match. This is the kind of, like, stupid character work that I love in ECW. It's stupid, but it's fleshed out, and it is intense for both sides. It's not just, like, I'm silly.
I liked this match. I thought the pacing was a little strange, and I think some of that might come down to maybe. The FBI have been working with, like, Tajiri and Super Crazy a lot recently.
Oh,
so
true. And these two are a lot slower.
Yeah, I'm wondering, is it my own expectations? Because I'm like, it didn't seem like the FBI got a lot of significant offense. Like, they were working over Doring for a bit, but it didn't seem like they did a lot of interesting stuff.
That's fair. But they were, like, they were still telling a story, like, with each other.
Yeah, so. Like, and the energy was good. It just, yeah. Like, I'm like, I just wanted something a little more from this.
Maybe, yeah. I still liked it a lot.
I think in reality, I just wanted this to go, like, a couple more minutes.
Yeah. I feel like I can say that for a lot of matches on this card. Like, they, and some, I could say, shave a few minutes off. Like, a lot of the matches in the early half of the card are so fast-paced and so quick. Not fast-paced, but, like, don't have enough time to breathe in some senses.
Yeah.
Like we said about the first match. If they each had, like, one or two more minutes, I think, like, it would have felt a little bit better. And this is one that would also, you know, do well with that.
Let's go backstage. We get a Spike Dudley promo mocking Rhino.
This is my favorite wrestling promo I've ever heard. It's so clear and concise.
Because he starts mocking Rhino and then just, like, interrupts himself to be like, hey, fuck you, man.
Just so straight up. Yeah. Like, we don't need the flash and fanfare of, like, the poetry of some of these promos. It's just like, you know what? Fuck you. And that's all you need. That's effective.
Spike points out how he's beaten a bunch of big guys, and one of the names on the list is Curtis fucking Hughes. And I'm like, dude, that's not the flex you think it is.
Who is Curtis Hughes?
He's fucking terrible.
Oh, well.
I know you've seen him. He's not memorable. He was paired with Chris Jericho when he debuted in WWF for a little while. He was, like, his bodyguard.
No, Ralphus.
No. He just, like, shows up places for a little bit until everyone remembers, oh, yeah, you're terrible. And then they get rid of him.
Oh. It's like a game he plays with himself. How long can I stay until they realize that I suck?
But Spike says he's going to take the title and then gets fired up and punches the wall. And right before they cut away, he, like, breaks and turns somebody off camera. Like, that was good?
Yeah. Like, just cut the promo by, like, a second and it's good. But you see him be like, and we got it? I think we got it. All right, cool.
Send for the man.
God.
It goes from that to some guy cleaning the ropes.
Oh, my God. My MVP. Not even lying. I love this man so much. It's just like the ring boy has a towel and he's going in just wiping all the sweat off of the ropes. And with every, he's into it. He's running.
He's running wiping. And the crowd's like, oh.
I love it so much. I love it. I love it here.
And it actually is important for us to see that.
Yeah, it does play into things. Because, like, that could have very easily just been for the audience, not necessarily needed to be on the pay-per-view. I'm wondering if that is, like, a culture thing at the shows. I don't know. That's why I'd like to go back in time. But that's the shit that I fucking love, man.
Our next match, it's C.W. Anderson versus Tommy Dreamer, who we haven't seen in a couple pay-per-views.
It has been a minute.
Before the match, they're doing the ring intros, and C.W. Anderson just grabs the mic, interrupting the announcer, who I'm like, oh, fuck, I cannot remember his name anymore. It doesn't really matter, but the ring announcer for ECW.
Oh, I don't know. That is something that lives in your brain, not mine.
Yeah, because I'm thinking, I'm like, oh, Jim Molyneux. I'm like, no, that's one of the referees. I'm like, oh, shit. But Anderson grabs the mic and taunts Dreamer to fight him and then spits on him. I'm like, dude, you guys are about to have a match. Clearly he's going to fight you.
Yeah,
he made an entrance. Like, he's here to fight.
Oh, I'll fight you.
Dreamer punches him. The match starts. Dreamer counters a hip toss and hits a neck breaker. Anderson then offers a handshake, but Dreamer doesn't buy it and hits a leg sweep. They go to the mat and trade holds until an armbar, and Anderson bails to the floor. At some point during this match, you're like, I don't believe he's not related to Arn.
I really don't. I know you keep telling me that they are not related, but, like, come on. These two men are cut from the same cloth. At least cousins or something. Come on.
Dreamer stays in the arm and shoulder, but CW hits a shoulder stunner and then a super kick. Back outside, Anderson drops Dreamer on the guardrail and then sets a chair up against the ring post and puts Tommy Dreamer's arm in it. He then grabs a chair and starts hitting the top of the chair, which I'm like, that doesn't actually do anything.
Stop poking holes in this shit. It's fun. Are you having fun? Are you having fun?
Yes.
Then shut up.
Tommy Dreamer's also bleeding here, and it was just from like a punch. Like that was really it.
Well, we also found where he was.
Yeah.
He was very clearly bleeding. Like they were focusing on C.W. Anderson for nothing and making sure that Tommy Dreamer was just out of frame.
Dreamer tries to hit a chair shot with Anderson up against the ring post, but Anderson dodges it. Dreamer hits the ring post and then like speedily just like turns the other way and just throws the chair at Anderson. It's like, oh, okay.
I wrote a note, Tommy Blader.
It's not even a pun.
It's not a dreamer.
It's not, still.
He blades. I don't know why I wrote that down.
Anderson hits a reverse DDT to the arm and then wedges a chair in the corner, but is immediately thrown into it. In that same vein, Anderson sets the chair up in the center of the ring and then his atomic dropped onto it. Anderson lays on the chair then, like really cumbersome to like hold yourself up, and Tommy Dreamer hits a diving elbow.
Great.
Dreamer then grabs the ring crew towel from earlier.
From the same boy, the ring boy that was wiping the ring ropes.
And he runs Anderson's face on the ropes like we saw them getting cleaned.
And the audience goes, oh!
Anderson super kicks Dreamer and then brings the towel boy into the ring.
Yes, because this is the towel boy's fault.
Dreamer fights Anderson off with the help of the towel boy. Dreamer hits a tornado DDT for only a two, and then Lou E. Dangerously runs out and takes out the towel boy. Dreamer grabs Dangerously and gets him on the apron. Anderson stops short of hitting Louie, but Dreamer tries for a pile driver on Anderson, and Louie comes in and just breaks a phone on Dreamer's head.
He just blams this phone over Tommy. It is, like, into dust.
Anderson hits a DDT, and then Paul Heyman runs out, and he breaks a phone over Louie's head.
I really thought that Paul Heyman was already gone at this point. Like, I know that there is that big reveal, but I thought that he was not around.
Yeah, he's not the most present. I'm wondering if it's because they're in New York.
Maybe.
That it's like, he's here. Yeah, like, I know he wasn't like traveling a bunch for the show, so I think he might have been, he's around.
We don't get him for long. He just pops in, pops out.
Anderson goes after Paul, who begs off, and Dreamer saves him with a Spicoli driver for only a two. It's like, oh.
We both kind of know, like, that probably should have been the finish.
Honestly, after the towel boy spot kind of felt like a finish too. So we kind of had 2 points where it's like, okay, match maybe should end it here.
Yeah, but no, Paul Heyman definitely went to the Ric Flair school of begging off, because the way that he did it was so Ric Flair.
Anderson counters a DDT and hits a T-bone suplex. Anderson then grabs two chairs, but is put in a tree of woe. Tommy then lays the chairs in front of Anderson's face and hits a basement dropkick. Dreamer hits a pile driver, then grabs a table from ringside, and Dreamer side slams Anderson on top of the table, which is not set up. Dreamer goes up the top rope, but a chair is thrown into him. Anderson then suplexes Dreamer onto the table, which breaks it.
Yeah, the flat, not set up table, it still breaks in half. I feel like you gotta have some extra power there. Like, you don't really have, like, gravity to help you, you know, physics it.
I don't know if it was supposed to break, because the next thing Anderson does is grab another table, so I'm wondering.
Maybe these are just extra flimsy tables.
But Anderson sets that table up in the corner. Dreamer hits a tomahawk to a restless crowd. Like, they're like, no, this match should have ended already.
Yeah, and I kind of agree. Like, you and I were both kind of itching for this to be done at this point, too.
He then flips the table upside down in the corner with the legs up.
Yeah, and I'm like, the metal was like exposed out into the elements.
Dreamer wants another Spicoli driver, but Anderson counters it, and they have to kind of like do-si-do a little bit, because Anderson hits a spine buster through the table and the legs for the win.
Woof, woof, woof.
This match started feeling very like mid-90s WCW.
Okay.
In like, this feels like it like would have been in the vein of like a Johnny B. Bad DDP kind of style match.
Okay, yeah.
I see. And then it went into like the more like story kind of like big moment finishes stuff.
Yeah, the ending was very ECW. That was fucking psychotic.
But as you noted, it overstayed its welcome.
It's funny that this is the match that follows the conversation we were just having. Like, oh man, I wish all these matches had like a minute to breathe. But this one was like, you stole the minutes from the matches that needed them.
I mean, just have Anderson hit a spine buster after the Paul spot. Like, I don't know why you had to keep going after that one.
Yeah, I don't know.
Like, you had the crowd at a fever pitch, and then he went, no, let's cool him off.
Right.
Backstage, we get an Unholy Alliance promo with Mikey doing a puppet thing, talking to Tajiri.
Yeah, I didn't get the puppet thing.
And they're like, oh, I haven't seen the Sinister Minister. He's at, like, the Funny Farm or something. And then he just comes in, he's like, I escaped!
Ah, surprise! I thrive in the cuckoo's nest.
Yep, and he shows his fucked up hand.
Yeah, because I forgot what happened to him last time. You had to remind me. He, like, blew himself up.
Our next match, it's Rhino versus Spike Dudley for the ECW television title.
Oh, I know. I'm going to be jazzed about this match.
Spike charges the ring and jumps on Rhino. He almost hits an acid drop, but is thrown off high in the air.
Spike is so floppy. I love this man. I think he's so good for wrestling. He's so willing to like take the bumps for the big, heavy guy. Every company needs a Spike Dudley.
Spike goes after the legs on Rhino and won't go down to punches. They go to the outside, and Rhino throws Spike into the barricade and then drops Spike from his shoulders onto a ringside table. Rhino then throws Spike in the ring, but like Spike's head is still hanging out, and Rhino hits a chair shot to just the head of Spike hanging out of the ring. I'm like, ow. Oh,
yeah. There's no way to do that cozy.
Yeah, and Spike's bleeding from there.
Yeah, I couldn't tell if it was hard way, but the way that the cut is, he bladed.
Rhino hits another chair shot to the head back in the ring. Rhino then starts going after the knee of Spike and sets up a chair and slams Spike's face onto it. Rhino confronts a boring chant from the crowd. I'm like, yeah. And Spike throws a chair in his face. Then it's a diving move with the chair to the floor. They go into the crowd and disappear from the cameras for a second. Spike then somewhat reappears on the second level, and we don't really see him until like mid-camera cut where he's diving from like the balcony railing onto Rhino.
Yeah, again, that's one of those moments that could have been really cool, but the camera didn't see it.
Then you hear Spike talking to somebody to set up for like a jumping chair shot. I don't know who he's talking to. He's like, hey, just hold that for a second. And I'm like,
it almost looked like he was talking to somebody from the audience.
Yeah. I'm like hold the ref right. Or like, yeah. Like Rhino, hey, stay there. I don't know.
I think what he was doing was asking the security on the audience side of the guardrail to hold the guardrail steady.
I don't know.
So he could do the jump off of it.
Back in the ring, Rhino counters an acid drop by dumping Spike out of the ring through a table.
Ugh, God, this man takes such crazy bumps.
Rhino brings Spike back in the ring and gores him, but Spike rolls the outside and hits Rhino's leg with a chair, then ties the leg up in the ropes with tape, then keeps hitting the knee with a chair, but then he bends down to do something, and Rhino locks in a sleeper and...
That's what gets him the win?
Chokes out Spike for the win. Like, oh.
What?
Yeah, it just came out of nowhere.
That was the worst part of the match to me, I think.
I think if you did a little bit of like a flourish or some like showmanship on it, or like made a big deal, it was just like, oh, he's down. Oh,
and that's
it. That's it. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. Like this match started out so fun and had such good hype for me. It petered out.
Even if you would just like turn him to the other side, like where it's facing the hard cam.
Maybe that would do it.
Yeah.
But it was just like after the balcony fall, jump, dive, whatever you want to call it. That's where it kind of lost me. Like, after that, when, like, the camera didn't see that, and then they couldn't really figure out how to do anything else in the audience, I was like, oh, you guys don't know what to do.
The tape job from Spike also didn't seem thorough.
What was that?
This match felt longer than it was.
Yes, and that's bad. It shouldn't do that. This could have been so wonderful. And I think that they just got a little lost in the sauce and didn't have everything fully planned out and tried to wing it and failed.
Yeah, and I know their goal was to have Rhino look like a killer, and it didn't really... get that as much in this match.
I was really ready for you to make a killer reference.
Why would I make a killer reference?
Well, I don't know if you know this, but this wrestler that we know is Johnny B. Bull. He actually... Johnny B. Bull?
Johnny B. Bull? Nope, you missed your chance. That's we're moving on. Spike gets structured out, and we get the same horny ECW ad.
Johnny B. Bull. I'm just thinking of Johnny B. Bad as a bull now. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Steve Corino and Jack Victory are backstage. Francine comes in to basically bang Corino because he has the title belt.
I mean, hey.
Did you catch why Steve Corino says no?
No.
She's like, hey, I can help you like de-stress before the match. She's like, oh, I just took care of myself. I'm good.
Oh, really? Oh, I kind of got that as like Steve Corino was too like innocent. He doesn't know what he's saying no to.
No, he jerked himself off.
Got it. Oh, okay. Honestly, what I heard that was like, oh, I'm hanging out with my friend. I'm not stressed. Like, that's how I heard that, that's definitely...
No, he casually was like, I just cranked one out. I'm good.
Yeah, what you said is definitely what it was.
Jack Victory holds the title sometimes, so that's enough for Francine. They go into the other room.
Yeah.
Steve Corino then, he's like, you know what? On second thought, yeah, I'll bang her. And he goes to join, but Just Incredible attacks him with a cane. He knocks on the door. He's like, all right, Francine, time to go. And then we hear Jack Victory yell, and Francine comes out and is basically like, I bit his dick.
Is that what happened?
Yeah, she goes, sharp teeth or a bitch.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Yikes. I missed all of this subtext. How did you... It's because you watched the show three times. I missed all of this subtext.
Technically, I watched the show twice, but I watched this next match three times, and we'll get to why at the very end of the match.
Valid.
The next match is the Unholy Alliance of Tajiri and Mikey Whipwreck with the Sinister Minister versus Super Crazy and a mystery partner that I don't know why had to be a mystery.
It didn't have to be a mystery.
Because Crazy slides in and gets stomped, and the mystery partner's music hits. It's Kid Cash.
Wow. Wow.
And Crazy is getting stomped out, and Kid Cash waits for his musical cue in the song to come out. I'm like, dude, go out there.
He's not a team player.
Cash takes out the Alliance, and everyone gets sorted out. Whipwreck somehow hits Cash from behind. After they got cleared from the ring, he managed to sneak up on Kid Cash. And I'm like, what? How did you? But he and Cash trade counters until a springboard sunset flip and then a Russian leg sweep and leg drop. Cash hits a Hurricane Rana and the two pause. Like, weird timing on that. They then, like, push each other and then tag in their partners. I'm like,
cool.
Yeah.
God, you can really feel how our energy just dipped.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I want to go back to when I said Johnny B. Bull.
Tajiri and Super Crazy tag in, and Tajiri hits a handspring elbow, and then Crazy hits a tilt-a-whirl backbreaker. The two grab hands, trade some luchador-esque action, lots of arm drags, and then a standoff. Tajiri then locks in a sharpshooter with Crazy laying on the bottom rope, and Whipwreck hits a vaulting leg drop onto Crazy. Kid Cash comes in, eats a kick. They then set up a complicated spot, Cash and Crazy's head on the bottom rope, and the Unholy Alliance then set up like a little like tent or like tower of chairs around the heads and then hit like double kicks to it.
And it looked like they were trying to make this spot a lot more convoluted than it was. But I think it was Tajiri was just like, fuck it, I'm kicking him. And he was just like, I don't care what it looks like, we're going.
I feel like I love Tajiri. That's a lot of his offense. Just fuck it, I'm kicking him.
I love Tajiri. But I did get that vibe in the moment. Like, it's fine, go.
Crazy and Cash dodge out of a Tree of Woe spot, and then Crazy hits a springboard moonsault onto the floor, onto the Alliance, followed by Kid Cash springboarding off the ref's back, diving onto all three men, but namely Super Crazy.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, he got the worst of that. He's your partner. Cash hits a corkscrew moonsault onto both opponents, which leads to a double D-Ace punch spot.
Double D-Ace?
They count it in Spanish.
Correct. I didn't expect you to call it that, though.
See Crazy dive in the crowd, probably from the barricade. The camera mostly messes it, so I'm like, I don't know what's going on over there.
Couldn't tell you. I was very focused on other things in this match that we'll get to.
The Alliance hits a leg lock float over slam to Cash, and then a double gut buster and double drop kick. Whipwreck sets up chairs near the corner, but Cash counters a move and hits a Falcon Arrow elsewhere, like not onto the chairs.
Yeah.
Cash then lays Whipwreck on the chairs and goes up top, but is stopped and hit with a top rope whippersnapper onto the chairs, which doesn't really work.
Mm.
He's hitting a jumping stunner. So Cash is going to hit his shoulder, not the chairs.
Yeah. So he's kind of doing it to himself.
And in that same vein, they immediately go to the apron, and Whipwreck hits a whippersnapper from the apron through the ringside table.
Right.
And I don't know what happens here, because both men are down from that spot, and Tajiri and Super Crazy slowly just get into the ring at the same time. Like, I guess we're gonna fight now. Like,
were there no notes on what happened here? So yeah, at this point, Whipwreck and Kid Cash vanish. Like, they just are ringside. We think that my thought is that something happened with the table and one of them got sincerely fucked up, and like they are working with EMTs to like, what do we do now? And
no, because they come back into the match.
They come back, but Super Crazy and Tajiri, they stall weirdly. Like, you know, Tajiri is good at what he does. So like, it ends up being, I guess, okay, passable. I'll say passable. But it's a very strange vibe shift.
And then Crazy hits his like triple moonsaults, and I'm like, are you gonna go like straight to a finish? Like, oh no, not even remotely.
No.
He gets pushed to the floor from the top rope, and I think it might be the camera that creates this vibe as well. Cause it just like holds on a wide shot where you see like nothing's happening. And
yeah.
Like, they're just kind of stalling around ringside and just looking around. And back in the ring, Crazy hits a top rope face buster and then a springboard moonsault. Tajiri gets out of a sunset flip with a chair shot. Tajiri then locks in a tarantula, like the other way of the ropes, because usually he's on the inside.
An inverted tarantula?
Not quite.
Invertarantula?
He's stopped by Kid Cash, and Whipwreck also comes back. It's like, oh,
there you go. Okay. And we're back.
Tajiri miss Super Crazy, and Whipwreck and Cash go to the floor, and Whipwreck slides a table inside the ring. Super Crazy's still down, and I guess he's selling the mist, but he'll just stop selling it later.
Yeah.
Tajiri slowly sets up a table. There's also a table at ringside now. Kid Cash hits a top rope Frankensteiner from the ring through the ringside table. In the ring, Crazy hits a springboard dropkick and then lifts the legs of the table, but doesn't flip it over. Tajiri then hits a tornado DDT and big kicks. Then Tajiri grabs three chairs, lays them on Super Crazy, sets up the table over top Super Crazy, and hits a diving coup de grace onto the pile for the win.
What?
Now, I mentioned I watched this match three times.
Yes, and I mentioned I was very distracted by something else.
To borrow a segment from OSW, we had to do a jock swatch for Super Crazy.
The whole match, I was clocking how often he was adjusting his gear. It was so distracting. Every single time he did anything, whether he was selling, whether he was setting up, like, he was adjusting his bottoms every time. And, like, the only thing that I can think happened is something that happens very often to women. When you're wearing, like, Spanx or something, they roll. And it's really uncomfortable when they roll. So I think that's what was happening, was his briefs or whatever were rolling down and it was uncomfortable. So he was trying to pull it back up. But what was the final number?
So this is an 18-minute match.
Yes.
And I might have missed some because, again, they go off camera a bit. There's other stuff going on. I counted 32 adjustments, including one when he has the chairs on top of him. I see him grab the waist to do something.
Jesus Christ.
I might have been a little liberal with some of them, but I kept seeing him grab.
He just kept reaching. Yeah. Oh, my God.
So 32 times.
That's egregious. I knew it was bad, but, like, yikes.
Yeah.
It was so distracting. It took me out of the match so badly.
It didn't help that the match hit a weird wall at that point.
It did, yeah.
And it already was kind of awkward at points before that of... Yeah. One of the first things that happens is the weird push of, like, two guys who didn't have a spot go right. It was kind of the vibe of that. I don't know what it was, but...
Yeah.
There was a point where Mikey, like, gets hit into the guardrail, like, smashes his elbow towards the end of the match, too.
Yeah.
I'm like, I don't know what happened here, but...
This was so confusing.
I had, like, such high hopes for this match, and it was kind of a letdown.
Oh, it was significantly a letdown to me.
And I saw something, I'm like, oh, that match, like, stole the show. I'm like, did it?
What? Oh, yeah, because when we were talking about this show before we started watching it, you were giving me, like, the breakdown of, like, oh, yeah, it's pretty underwhelming, like, beginning, and then, like, the last two matches are really, really great. And I was like, are you sure? Were you reading about the right show? Because what?
We then go to a train station, and... DeBaldi's just like put over the transit of New York City, and they're like, and you know, massacre on 34th Street. This is what you should have fucking put at the start of the show.
Yeah, the show's almost over, gang.
I suppose the bullshit Steve Corino and Jack Victory promo. Yeah. Put this.
This was funny too because it was so clearly like this wasn't a set. They just went to a subway station. We're filming this.
Yeah,
there were people walking behind them. They're like, "What the fuck is going on?"
Yeah, because they're yelling, "There's gonna be a massacre!"
Right. Like, it's 2000. Nothing bad has happened in New York yet. But, like, I would still perk my ears up. Like, what do you mean a massacre?
We then get the blue meanie driving around the city complaining that he's not getting laid.
Well, why the fuck are you driving around New York City? Are you psychotic?
He then picks up a hooker who's Jasmine St. Clair, and she's looking for the pay-per-view. And
again, it's almost over, guys.
They tease Roadhead, and she tells the cameraman to, like, turn the camera off.
So she's going to blow him.
Probably not the most surprising. This is apparently cut from the network. But doesn't all that make you excited for the main event?
No, I've actually forgotten who's in the main event.
It is Steve Corino with Jack Victory versus Jerry Lynn versus Just Incredible with Francine for the ECW World title.
So throughout the show, we've seen Steve Corino and Just Incredible getting into it. Where the fuck has Jerry Lynn been? That was so confusing to me. That was the confusing third party to me in this. Because Jerry Lynn came out, I was like... This isn't the main event. There's no... Why the fuck would Jerry Lynn be in the main event? Why is he part of this?
Well, we noted the opening match is like, hey, we saw this last month. We pretty much saw this last month. Of the main event of November to Remember was the weird double Jeopardy match where it was the two simultaneous singles matches of... It was some combination of these three and the Sandman.
Mm.
And the only one of those four who's not in this match gets the most chance of anybody... during this match.
Well.
And, yeah, it feels like there's not really someone to root for here, and the crowd agrees with that, because they introduce everybody, and Jerry Lynn gets booed, Just Incredible gets booed, and Steve Corino gets a little polite, hey. Like,
yeah,
no one's into his act.
No one cares. And this is the main event! This is how we're finishing the show!
And immediate, we want Sandman chance.
Yeah, I'm like, same. Oh, no. I also want Sandman.
Credible starts with a kendo stick, but Lynn immediately takes it and hits both men. Lynn hits a head scissors to Corino and a bulldog to Credible. Credible stomps Lynn in the corner. And then for basically the entire match, it's pretty much just guys trading punches. They don't do anything.
Yeah, it's very punch heavy. And it's boring. Like, there are ways for punch heavy matches to be entertaining. This is not the way.
Yeah, you need good psychology if you're going to do that. And this
some
didn't
booyeing.
Have it. What's sad is everyone ending up on the outside... And Just Incredible kind of just botches going over the guardrail and smashes his knee.
Oh, my God.
And Jerry Lynn goes to be like, hey, I'm going to throw that side. And he just goes, get off me, asshole, and just walks away. I'm like, Jared Leto didn't fuck up that spot, man. You did.
No, yeah, he very clearly hurt his knee and was like, I need a minute to go recollect myself. Get the fuck away from me.
And I don't know whether like it's that or what, but he seems gassed for like this whole match.
Hitting your knee gasses you. That's crazy.
Well, I'm saying it may have him moving slower, like he's gassed.
Oh, maybe.
Carino and Lynn brawl in the crowd. Credible eventually joins. More just trading punches. Carino's whipped back into the crowd. The crowd decides to amuse themselves by chanting about Francine, because they are not caring about this match.
Yeah, they're caring about anything else. Like, I'm amazed we didn't get, like, a show your tits chant.
Well, I think Justin Credible senses this, because he grabs a mic to compensate and just starts being like, fuck you, pussy. I'm going to beat the shit out of you.
Yeah, that's your biggest tell when a wrestler does not feel confident. Like, that is what you always point to.
When like, you grab a mic to be like, this isn't working.
That was, like, when we were watching this, you kind of looked at like, oh, shit. He does not like what he's doing right now. He knows that this is not going well.
Carino hits a jumping sidekick, and everyone slowly trades pin attempts. Everyone's down on a clothesline, and then Carino hits a bionic elbow. Then Lynn hits a tornado DDT to Carino and a reverse DDT. Credible wants a that's incredible, but Lynn counters and hits one of his own. Jerry Lynn dodges a chair shot and kicks the chair into Carino. Jerry Lynn then hits his finisher, a cradle pile driver, to Steve Carino on the chair. For some reason, he does not try to pin Steve Carino.
Couldn't tell you why.
Immediately stands up, and then for even more baffling reasons, Francine comes in to distract Jerry Lynn. I'm like, you're not with Carino. Let him lose.
Right. This is not a match that needs distraction, necessarily.
But she's grinding on Jerry Lynn, and then Francine goes to low blow Jerry Lynn, but Jerry Lynn, like, counters this by jumping with Justin Credible behind him. So Francine ends up kicking Justin Credible. Jerry Lynn then gets Francine in the corner and is going to hit her, but he senses Justin Credible is behind him and moves. So Justin Credible just, like, punches Francine in the face, effectively. That doesn't faze him, though, because he just hits a that's incredible on Lynn and eliminates him. Like, oh, okay.
He gets eliminated so unceremoniously.
Yeah.
It just happens kind of out of nowhere, which is kind of correct for how he's billed in this match. Like, I barely even knew he was in the match. So, yeah, I guess you get eliminated quickly and quietly.
On commentary, Cyrus, who we really haven't said much about.
Not at all. No, we really haven't talked about commentary at all.
He claims this is a screw job and leaves commentary, The crowd chants for Sandman.
Bitches love a screw job.
Joey Styles points out that this duo was how the last pay-per-view ended, and I'm like, that doesn't feel epic, that just feels repetitive.
Yeah, I think they want it to be epic. I think they want it to be like, oh, the story that never ends, and like, that's not always a good thing.
Yep, so we're down to two. First thing they do, trade some punches.
Sure.
They sloppily do a flare turnbuckle spot, Credible hits a super kick on the outside, and remember how I mentioned Credible might be gassed?
Yeah.
He grabs a bottle of water and just starts drinking some of it. I mean, you don't see that wrestling.
That's true. And I've always, like, thought about that, when, especially in the era of, like, the prime shit being ringside and, like, current day WWE. Like, why don't you just stop and drink? Like, take a drink. We always see, like, Triple H does a lot where he grabs, like, commentary's water and, like, pours all over himself because the man fucking loves to be wet. But, like, he doesn't drink it. Why don't you drink it?
I can't think of Triple H doing that. So I don't know the spot you're talking about.
No. Maybe I'm.
He brings his water bottle out and does it.
But he still doesn't drink it. He puts some in his mouth. And he spits it all over the place. Who am I thinking of that always steals from the commentary and like pours all over themselves? I don't know. I stand by Triple H just loves to be wet.
Carino and Credible brawl up to the stage and trade more punches before Carino grabs a ladder and sets it up against the guardrail.
Yeah, where the fuck did this ladder come from?
I think just from backstage.
It's so dirty though. Like, this is very clearly a working ladder.
And Carino sets this up against the guardrail. And then gets whipped into it. I'm like, that's a way to smash somebody in the crowd's face.
Uh-huh, that's a lawsuit, brother, and you don't have the funding for a lawsuit.
Back in the ring, Credible sets up a chair and is dropped to hold onto it. Carino brings the dirty ladder in the ring and then bites the head of Credible.
Ugh, I don't like the face biting. It's
then
so gross.
We get a chant. I rewound this 8 times. I swear to God, the crowd starts chanting for Ahmed Johnson. And I don't know why. I could not.
Are you sure that's what they're saying?
I couldn't make anything else out of it. Maybe also I heard it as that and then I couldn't do anything else. But I'm just like, it wasn't anyone in the match. Because like no one had that cadence. And I'm like, what the who are you chanting for?
Was Ahmed Johnson ever in ECW?
No. Maybe he's I'm like, is he there?
Maybe he's there. Is he signed for the company right now?
No.
Then maybe. Weird. Very weird.
Yeah, I rewound it because I'm like, they can't be chanting Ahmed Johnson. And I'm like, that's the only thing that sounds clear in my, like, to me. So
that's crazy.
I don't know. If you know, like, tweet in because that one's going to bother me. Incredible suplexes Carino onto the ladder on the ropes. Jack Victory helps Carino kick out, and then him and the ref just start going, hey, fuck you. Fuck you too. Hey, get the fuck away. Hey,
fuck you, fuck you. Fuck you.
Carino and Credible brawl into the crowd and then up to the second level. Credible hits a kendo stick shot to the head and then tries to dump Carino over the railing to the floor. And we then get a spot of Carino like dangling from the railing. Ugh. And just Incredible hits him and he falls to the floor. However, the
that
crowd...
That sounds crazy.
The crowd is standing up and you can see... It's like a three, it's like max 5 foot drop.
I think that's generous. I think it's like maybe three.
This episode Always Sunny, where at the end of it, Frank is trying to like push somebody like off the roof who's like dangling.
Yeah.
And the fall is revealed to be like a 2 foot fall. That's and I just had that vibes feels. From this. Yeah.
Yeah. I get that.
I don't know whether this was just safety or again being gassed. Credible has the kendo stick and is like hunched over using it as a cane to get back down. I'm like, are God. You really that dead?
I maybe. It might be the Jey Uso effect where he just put out too much energy at the start and can't get it back.
Hey, say what you want about Jey Uso. He is at least kind of over.
I don't know about anymore.
Just Incredible now.
No.
Just Incredible also. Apparently shoot piece of shit.
Yeah.
So they go back to the ring and trade chops. Credible casually hits a that's Incredible, but Carino kicks out. Credible didn't care. Ugh. Carino is thrown into a ladder in the corner and then dodges a Credible charge and hits an old school expulsion, and Steve Carino wins.
Woo!
Enter Sandman immediately hits.
Good. We needed this because, oh my God, who cares about that ending?
Sandman comes to the ring, breaks his cane over Victory and Carino,
yeah.
steals the belt,
Hell
cracks
yeah.
some beers,
Hell
celebrates
yeah.
with the fans.
Hell yeah. This is what we needed. We needed this to end the show. If the show ended with Steve Carino retaining, boring, lame. We needed this last minute, like, get the crowd back on our side.
Well, there is one more thing, because we then go to, like, outside the building, and Jerry Lynn agrees to Cyrus's offer to manage him via this weird pimp and whore metaphor they're going for.
Yeah, that was weird. But I'm more focused on the Sandman thing.
Yes.
I had a lot more fun with that. No, that was exactly what it needed. It was beer chugging. He went up to the balcony side. The security that was around him was a little aggressive, but like I understood why. Because he was like walking right along the railing and very easily could have been pushed over.
Yeah.
Sure. But he was like pouring beer into people's mouths. He's not checking ages this time, which I was like, oversight. But great vibe.
Yeah.
Great savior of the show. Big fan.
Yeah. And that's what you want from Sandman. This is like yes. the perfect Sandman experience.
This is exactly what you want from Sandman. I was convinced that he was somehow going to make himself bleed without doing a single wrestling move. Because he was jamming the beer cans on his forehead like he always does. I don't think he actually bust himself open, but he very well could have.
Yeah. As for the match, this was so dull.
Oh,
and like,
my God.
Yeah. Like the first time I watched it, I zoned out.
Yeah, that's fair. I took a lot of notes for it just because I think like writing down notes was keeping me awake. But to what cost?
Clearly, this group is not clicking as your main event scene.
Definitely not.
I think losing Rob Van Dam really hurt the plans for that.
Yeah.
And they're also just losing talent left and right. And it's because they're not paying guys.
Right. Yeah. Paul. Yeah. So they have, this was their last pay-per-view or they have one more pay-per-view?
They have one more. They have Guilty as Charged in January.
Okay.
Which I think is for us like episode 152 or something.
Okay. So it's not too far out.
No.
But no, you're right. Like the internal politics of this company is that's what kills this. And that's the heartbreaking part of all of this. Because this is a fun company. And I love going back to ECW because I have so much fun watching these shows. It's not like, what are we doing, gang? It's just like, we're having fun. That's what we're doing, gang.
Yeah, so this show as a whole, it's not spectacular. But it's definition of something that should be on like Peacock's channel of just like, hey, rotating WWE content.
Yeah.
Like, this is great to just have on.
Oh, yeah.
No match is, all right, I got to stop and watch this. But like, hey, you know, I'll just like, you know, pop in, watch a match or two, yeah. pop out.
Yeah, perfect.
Very easy for casual watching.
It is. And that's what kind of happened to us while we were watching it. We just kind of sat and started watching, not taking like meticulous notes. It was just fun.
And I wonder if some part of the ease of that is, I think I told you while we were watching, I'm like, I think we're done with New Jack.
That's true. He wasn't on this show.
He's not on this show. He's not wrestling on the next one.
Okay.
I think he wrestles on like the dark match for the next one. So
he
maybe
was on the dark match for this show too.
Yeah.
So he just wasn't on the televised show. Interesting.
Yeah. I'm fine with that. Because usually he creates the bad vibes.
He does bring bad vibes. But yeah, no, you're right. It's just like the energy just feels better watching this show than it does even a Nitro. Like anything happening in WCW, I would pick this a million times over. Like, there was a point while we were watching this where I looked at you, I was like, why didn't we do a fucking ECW podcast? I would have had so much more fun. We would have gotten into less arguments about, like, why are we still watching this shit?
Well, if you ever finish your WrestleMania write-ups, start from the beginning of ECW television and just, like...
I could.
Back in, like, 94.
Woof.
You're gonna get a lot of Shane Douglas.
I don't know if I want that. We'll see. We'll see what happens.
A lot of cut the fucking music.
God, ECW started in 1984?
Yep.
Oh, God. It's 31 years old. Because we're recording this 3 days before my 31st birthday.
Yeah. And by the time it comes out, you will be 31.
I'm so old. A girl I work with said she thought I was 24 yesterday, and I almost cried.
I will. I actually will criticize one thing about this show.
Just one?
One additional thing. It was not festive.
That's true. Yeah. There was nothing Christmassy about this. There were no miracles.
Like, just hit him with a fucking Christmas tree. Just have one spot.
Or have one guy come out dressed as Santa. Or even, like, a hat. Like, oh my God, a Sandman came out in a Santa hat? Best bit.
I mean, Balls Mahoney used to be Santa Claus.
That's not good.
That's a WWE gimmick.
That's not good. I don't like that.
That's a gimmick that it's like, it has a 1 month shelf life. What are you going to do the rest of the year?
Yeah. He's got to go back to the workshop.
He was billed from being from the South Pole. Because Santa's from the North Pole.
This is a fucking, like...
This is a new gen gimmick.
No, this is like, oh, what are the it's like Bizarro Santa.
Yes, it's 100% yeah. That.
Stupid. I hate that.
Well, speaking of things you hate and some things you don't, let's go into best bit, worst bit, and MVP. Emily, what'd you get for best bit? Because we definitely didn't have a clear-cut winner for any of these.
No, we really didn't.
Well, that's a lie for the worst bit.
True. Actually, my worst bit is not your worst bit. But my best bit, I flopped between putting this in my MVP and my best bit. But I did the ring boy segment where he was going around wiping the towel. I fucking loved that so much. It brought such whimsy and fun to the show. I loved it so much.
I'm going to go with the photos of Dawn Marie and Jasmine.
No, you're not. No, you're not. Reel it back. No, you're not.
No, I am actually going to go with the FBI and Danny Doring and Roadkill.
I really like that match.
Yeah, yeah.
That was a really fun match.
Good energy with that. So.
Yeah. Those two teams are just so quintessential to why it is important to have characters and how character work can really make or break a match. Like, both of those teams know their characters. Every move they had was themed, and I love that.
Honorable mention, too. Fuck you, man.
Oh, man, wait, that's a great promo, too. Wait, shit.
Give it to that. Don't give it to the ring boy.
I loved the ring boy. He was going to be my MVP, but I changed it. I'll give it to the Spike Dudley promo because it's the best, most effective promo that I've ever seen on wrestling.
All right, Emily, what is your worst bit?
I gave it to the Jock Swatch.
Yeah.
It was so bad. The super crazy Jock Swatch was so distracting and, for me, ruined the match. A match that wasn't already going to be great, but that one ruined it.
Yeah.
I know yours is the main event, and you're right for that.
Yeah, I was so bored. The Super Crazy match at least had some interesting offense around the confusion.
Sure, and I didn't give it to the whole match. It was really just Super Crazy was the worst bit of that match.
Yeah, and then Emily, who is your MVP? I've fully decided on mine.
Mine's the Sandman.
Yeah, I think it has to be.
It has to be. He saved the show.
Like, sometimes we focus a little more on who brings the most value. He literally, like, that pay-per-view was going to end with such a wet fart.
Yeah.
And it did not.
Yeah. And God, the main event being called a wet fart is so accurate.
It ended with beer farts.
Beer burps.
Yeah, Sandman definitely brought the much-needed energy.
Yes. I think that the show would have been significantly worse off without that segment.
He might be close to the record for least amount of time on screen for us getting MVP.
Probably.
But until we go back to the world of WCW, you can listen to all of our back catalog. Everywhere podcasts are found except for SoundCloud. You can follow us on social media at ButtsInThePod. And again, if you know, tell me if that was an Ahmed Johnson chant or not.
Yes, please do, because he's going to be thinking about this for like the next month.
And then patreon.com/buttsintheseats. $5 a month. Get you over 40 bonus episodes.
Jeez, there's been 40 episodes over there?
Yeah, book reports.
We just did Halloween Havoc 1996, and it was a lot of fun. We're having a lot of fun conversations over
until
there
about that. Until the
main event. Sure.
Hey, just like this show.
Just like this show. But no, we have a lot of fun over on the Patreon. That's kind of where we have all of our levity, you know, not talking about current WCW. We're trying to not talk about that as much as possible. Can you tell?
We have a lot of bonus episodes coming up.
We do, because we don't want to talk about WCW anymore.
It's funny, those have been planned for a while. It just works out that way.
It works really well.
In the very near future, we're going to have episode 150 over here.
Woo.
And my special birthday pick over on the Patreon. So there is some fun stuff coming up, whether Emily likes it or not.
Yeah, well. That's kind of the that's the motto of the podcast, isn't it?
Whether Emily likes it or not. The British Bulldog's gonna win the Rumble, whether he wants to or not.
And with all of that said,
I'm Nick.
I'm Emily.
And thanks for listening to the Butts in the Seats podcast.
Happy holidays. Bye!